Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Bet of Melachim Bet, a chapter in which Eliyahu disappears from the earth, and it is his disappearance and the manner of his disappearance that feeds our continuing feeling that Eliyahu is a part of our lives, because we are never told of his death, we are told of his rising to heaven, and how we take that rising to heaven is something that will be an issue within the Perek. But the Perek begins with telling us that that's what's going to happen. Vayi b'ha'alot Hashem et Eliyahu ba'se'ara. It was the day when God was going to bring Eliyahu up in a storm to the heavens. Eliyahu and Elisha are going from Gilgal. So they're in the north of Israel. They're in the Gilgal. And they're coming down to where Eliyahu is going to be taken up to Shamayim. So Se'ara, Radak notes that later on, we don't see a Se'ara. Later on, we see a discussion of a chariot of fire and horses of fire, but not a se'ara, not a storm. So he suggests that the se'ara was referring to the ruach, to the wind, and that the wind is not visible, and therefore it's not mentioned later in the psukim. It's interesting to speculate about the Eliyahu being taken up in this way, when before, when we saw Eliyahu have a vision of Hashem, there was a ruach, and then a se'ara, and then an eish, and then a rash, and then the kol mamadaka. So he's taken up to heaven in the precursors of Hashem, as it were, the things that came before Hashem that were identified by the pasuk as not being Hashem. In any case, Vayomer Eliyahu el Elisha, Shev na po, ki Hashem shelachani ad Beit El. So Eliyahu says to Elisha, stay here, because God sent me to Beit El. Vayomer Elisha, chai Hashem v'chei nafshecha im ezovcha v'yedu Beit El. He swears, I'm not leaving you. And so they go to Beit El together. So Vayetzu b'nei hanevim asher Beit El el Elisha, Vayomer Eliyahu, Vayadati ki yom Hashem lokech et Adonecha mi'al roshecha, Vayomer gam ani yadati hecheshu. So they get to Beit El, and there are b'nei nevim there, meaning it seems like it means nevim in training. Rashi, however, quotes the opinion of Chazal that Adonecha, they say to Elisha, do you know that today God is taking your master from upon you? And Elisha says, I also know, be quiet. We'll get to that in a minute. But Rashi says that the reference to Adonecha, your master, is meant to imply that it's not their master. So the Rashi is sort of imagining that in Beit El there are Bnei HaNevi'im who are of equal stature to Eliyahu. That's a remarkable statement. Because Eliyahu, as we've been learning about him and thinking about him, seems to be second to Moshe Rabbeinu in many aspects of his prophecy. He has the vision that Moshe had at a slightly lower level, but it seems like he's at that level. So Rashi is suggesting that in Eliyahu's time there were prophets of equal level, and that's just there are prophets of equal level, and yet the Malchut Yisrael, the Northern Kingdom, is what it is. So that's a remarkable claim to have being made. We're going to see that the Radak doesn't make that claim, but he makes another remarkable claim about the level of Dvar Hashem that was out there at that time, and yet, again, the Malchut Yisrael, the Northern Kingdom, is doing little in terms of these issues and in terms of learning anything from them. So it becomes ever more remarkable. Now, Elisha says to them, I know, be quiet. So that issue of I know, be quiet, is that Elisha is unwilling to face up to what's happening, or he doesn't want them to know. He doesn't want Eliyahu to know that he knows. It's unclear. Any of these things are unclear. Because why is Eliyahu trying to keep Elisha from coming with him? So that maybe we'll see. But there's something going on here in terms of the tension around being there at the leaving. So it's not clear why Eliyahu is trying to resist it. So we have to follow it on. So in Pasuk Dalet, Vayomer lo Eliyahu, Elisha shev na po, ki Hashem shelachani yiricho. So he says to him, and this time he says his name, Elisha, please stay here, because Hashem sent me to yiricho. Vayomer chai Hashem chai nefshecha, imezovcha, vayavo yiricho. He says, I'm not leaving you, so they come to yiricho. So they've gone to Beit El, and they're moving to yiricho. And now, vayikshu b'nei nevim asher b'yiricho el Elisha. So Radak notes that there are b'nei nevim, which we generally translate as Nevi'im in training. There are B'nai Nevi'im in Beit El. There are B'nai Nevi'im in Yericho. And they also know that Hashem is taking Adonecha. So at least according to Rashi, that would mean, again, even these two are of equal stature to Eliyahu, which is hard to imagine. And he says, I also know, so be quiet. It's especially hard to imagine if there are these statue of Eliyahu, then Elisha is speaking to them in that way. But in any case, that's what they say to him, and again, you have the same thing. He says, please stay here, because Hashem sent me to the Jordan River. He says, I'm not leaving you. And so they go together. So Eliyahu is trying to resist it, and Elisha is insisting on going, and the Nevi'im know about it. So 50 people of these Bnei HaNevi'im go and they stand from afar, and the two of them stand by the Jordan. So the Eliyahu has, I don't know if it's failed, because if it was absolutely unacceptable to have Elisha come with him, you would think that Eliyahu would just say, stay here. He doesn't say stay here. He requests that he stay there, and Elisha refuses to stay there. So these Nevi'im don't go with them. They stay from afar. Why don't they go with them too? So we'll follow it along, and maybe we'll be able to understand. He takes his coat, and he folds it up. And remember, this is the coat that he had originally placed on Elisha when recruiting Elisha. He had thrown his coat over him. So this coat is something very important, although it's not clarified ever. And this is also the aderet that he had looked at, that he had put his face into when he was back on Har Sinai. And now he folds up the coat, vayaket amayim, and he hits the water, vayachatzu heina vahina, and they split, vayavru shnehem becharava. So here they pass through, it's like a splitting of Yamsuf, and they pass through the river, through the Jordan, on dry land. Vayichavram. So by the way, the Radak, I'm sorry, I picked up this Radak, I didn't mention it. The Radak doesn't say that they were of the stature of Eliyahu, but he does notice that there are prophets in Beit El and prophets in Yericho, and he says there were really prophets all over the land trying to bring the northern kingdom back to the proper observance of God. So you hear that claim, and then it makes you, it gives you at least the Radak's impression of the level of evil into which the northern kingdom had sunk, and the level of their resistance, of their inability to accept truth. Meaning you have prophets all over the land discussing and talking about Hashem. Presumably you have competitor prophets, as we saw on other occasions. You have people giving the opposite information, and the Jewish people just have prophets all over the place. And you have to assume that all of these prophets, the true ones and the false ones, are convincing in the show that they put on, and it's almost like an inability to understand who's a real prophet and or whose prophecy is right on the money and who's not, and that's the situation there. So now Eliyahu and Elisha are approaching the Yarden, and are passing through Yarden, and they pass through on dry land. Vayhik Avram, they're in the middle of passing through the Jordan. Eliyahu Amar El Elisha She'al Ma'aselach. So they're in passing, they're passing through the Jordan, and Eliyahu says to Elisha, ask me what I should do for you, before they, I am taken from you. And Elisha says, I want double your spirit on me. Double your spirit on me. So the Gemara, just noting that there's something incongruous about this, so the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Hei Amud Bet, notes that people are jealous of each other, except for, and unfortunately in our day this isn't always true, but it's supposed to be true, that's what the Gemara was suggesting, fathers for their sons, right? Fathers for their sons, and masters for their students, right? Teachers for their students. And they prove this in the terms of fathers and sons with Dov and Shlomo, but in terms of teachers and students, our issue here, from Eliyahu and Elisha. That Elisha feels comfortable asking Eliyahu and saying to Eliyahu, I want double what you had. So if you're worried that your master, if you have a hint of worry that your master would, if you have a hint of worry that your master would be jealous of you, you would never ask this. So Eliyahu's response is instructive. Vayomer hikshita lishol. Im tireh oti lukach meitach yehi lecha kein, v'imayin lo yiyeh. He says, you have asked a hard thing, and I'll tell you, if you see me leave you, if you see me taken from you, then you'll get it. And if you don't, then you won't. So what's this hikshita lishol? What does that mean? It's hard. What you've asked for is hard. So Rashi says, yeshal atid lecha yoter mashi yesh li biyadi. I can't give you more than what I have. Right? So in that sense, Eliyahu's the idea of you've asked for something hard doesn't mean it's hard in an objective sense and it's just more hard. It's that Eliyahu has certain spiritual power, certain spiritual abilities, but he only has what he has. And Elisha is clearly asking for more than what he has. So it's impossible for Eliyahu to give more than what he has. So in other words, if Eliyahu is being asked to make a final gift, right, to make a final gift to Elisha, then it can only be what he owns. And Elisha has asked for something other than that, clearly and for sure. The Radak adds another aspect to it, because he says, V'afa pichinim yebecha koach ruach elokim shetuchal iroti kishe'elakach, yedati kim etakel yelecha. So I think Radak hits it on the head. And this explains the whole prior workup, I think, about this as well. Eliyahu says to Elisha, if you have the spiritual power to witness what's about to happen, then it must mean that you will get what you want as well. Then you have the spiritual power to get what Hashem wants for you. But what was Elisha doing asking for twice what you have? So our witnessing all these B'nai Devim around suggests something, and this will, I think, characterize much of what Elisha's life was about, in that if Eliyahu, being Eliyahu, had made so little impact on the northern kingdom in terms of their being able to recognize that Hashem Hu Elokim, Eliyahu had a brief shining moment in which he said it, but other than that, he hadn't really gotten very far in terms of that. So I think Elisha is saying, knowing that I'm not you, right? Knowing that I'm not you, and I'm not gonna, I don't have your fire, I don't have your this, I don't have your that, I need double of what you had. And maybe with double of what you had, I'll be able to make more of an impact than you did, or at least even as much of an impact as you did. And Eliyahu says, I can't give it to you. And the only way we'll be able to know if it's going to happen that way is if, in fact, you see me taken for you, right? It's going to have to be something that comes from Hashem rather than from me. And this whole idea of watching what's happening and seeing what Elisha is allowed to see perhaps suggests what was going on for Eliyahu when he asked Elisha, to stay in each of the places. If Eliyahu knows that he's been taken up to heaven, and what that means, but he's been taken up to heaven in some kind of a way, and he asked Eliyahu not to stay, Elisha not to say it, I suspect, I've never been involved in one of these incidents, but I suspect that there might be some danger involved. And that might explain as well why the B'nai HaNevi'im from Yericho, who follow them, why don't they just join them? So I think the answer is that being part of what happens there is a two-edged sword. You are upraised spiritually, but if you try to go where you're not and where you can't be, so then you have a problem. And that's why others didn't do it, and that might be why Eliyahu was nervous. Eliyahu doesn't know Elisha's capabilities, because even right here we see that when Elisha asks him for this, so Eliyahu knows he can't grant it, that's true, but he's not even sure that Eliyahu can get it. Why is he not sure that Eliyahu can get it, that Elisha can get it? Because he doesn't know what Elisha's powers are. He doesn't know what Elisha's spiritual capabilities are. And he says, if Hashem grants it to you, then you'll have it. And if not, then you can't have it. So there is a certain amount in which, while Elisha has been, we'll see later on, they'll use the phrase of Elisha being the one who poured water over the hands of Eliyahu. So their relationship, right? Elisha comes in fairly late in the game, in Eliyahu's career. Eliyahu is only told to take Elisha as a student after he's had his experience at Har Sinai, and after he has, at least in our reading, after he has demonstrated that he can't continue on. So Elisha comes in fairly late in the game, and Eliyahu seems unsure of how far along Elisha has come in being able to replace him. And that's what seems to be going on here. So Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayim Aholchim Haloch V'daber, and they're walking along and talking. V'nei Rechav Eish V'susei Eish. And here comes a chariot of fire and horses of fire. V'yifridu Ben Shnehem, and they separate the two of them. Vayal Eliyahu Bas'ara HaShamayim. Eliyahu goes up in a storm into heaven. So this whole idea of they were walking along and talking when the chariot came leads the Gemara in Sota Daf Mem Tet to say an interesting thing. It says the two Talmidei Chachamim are walking along and not talking about Torah, so Re'uyin Li Saref Ba'esh, they deserve to be burned up in fire. And how does the Gemara know this? It knows it from our incident, because it says they were walking along and talking to each other, presumably in Torah. And then it says, and here's a rechavesh. It says, Tama dika dibor halaka dibor ruin l'saref. It was only because they were talking. Had they not been talking, then they would have been worthy of burning. So that, the stakes are remarkably high, right? The Gemara is deriving from here the idea that at least in theory, Talmidei Chachamim have the responsibility whenever they're talking to each other, when they're walking along the road, they need to be talking in Divrei Torah. They need to be talking in Divrei Torah, and if not, they're worthy of burning up in fire. That's a standard of severity that we are unused to, I think we're unaccustomed to thinking of. But it means that, and it explains sort of what Eliyahu's worry was about Elisha, it means that Eliyahu operates, and therefore Elisha operates, at a level of seriousness, and a level of worry, and a level of being taken seriously that is difficult, that is dangerous. And if you don't do it right, if you don't handle it right, you have a significant problem. And that's what the stakes are here, and that's why Eliyahu tried to discourage Elisha from coming. But in any case, Elisha's here, and they were talking in Divrei Torah, so they're not burned up, and the Rechavesh and the Susei Esh come along. The Elisha and Eliyahu's taken up Basar HaShamayim. Now the Radak, interestingly, and this sort of reflects his philosophical connection, the Radak says that this Rechavesh and these Susei Esh burn Eliyahu's body. They burn Eliyahu's body off of him, and then he gets taken up into the Sarah HaShamayim. Where is that Radak? They burn up the body, and only, by the way, the Radak thinks, only all that's left, is that there? All that's left is that Aderet that we spoke about. That's going to fall to the ground, and Elisha is going to take hold of that, and that's going to become his. We're going to see it in a moment. But Eliyahu himself, it seems like, is, in the Radak's reading, is burned, the physical body is burned, but the soul rises l'shamayim, right? Al-Gala'esh v'sham nisrefu b'gadav zulati ha'deren v'kaleb b'saro v'atzmo v'haruach shavay l'alokim ha'shenetana. The body is burned and the spirit goes back to the God who gave it. Now that's a philosophical view of the way the soul, the mortal soul, continues without the body and doesn't need the body. And it suggests that the Rechavesh here is not a chariot that will carry him up, but rather that will escort the soul part and free the soul of the body. So why would the Aderet survive? Why would this coat, this mantle survive? So in the simple reading you say it survives because Elisha is going to do a miracle with it on the way back. But another possibility is that if you grant that Eliyahu's physical body is going to be lost, then the Aderet would seem to be the physical expression of Eliyahu's impact on the world, and that survives as a physical item, as a physical reality. Elisha Roah, so Elisha's seeing this, Behum mitzaik avi avi rechav Yisrael parashav, and he's crying out, a phrase that becomes famous. We'll see that at the end of Elisha's life, the king of the northern kingdom used the phrase, so apparently not only became famous, became accepted in wide circles, regardless of people's commitment to Hashem. So, Avi Avi, my father, Rechav Yisrael Parashav. The Radak suggests that that was why the fire took the form of a chariot and of horses, to teach him this lesson that he should learn these words, Avi Avi, Rechav Yisrael Parashav, to teach him that that's what Elisha was, not what was being lost. So Elisha makes that cry. He's upset. My father, the chariot of the Jewish people, and as far as meaning the leader of the Jewish people, the Lora Hawo, and he doesn't see him anymore. So he takes his clothing and he tears them into two separate tears. It is from here that the Gemara derives the principle that a kriya, Rachmana Litzlan, when people lose those relatives close to them, they have to tear a real kriya. And a real kriya involves tearing the garment into two fully separate kriyim and never again, sewing them up. So, Vayarim et Aderet Eliyahu. He picks up the Aderet, Hashem Naflami Alam, Vayashav, Vayamor al Sfat HaYarden. And he goes back to the edge of the Jordan. Vayikach et Aderet Eliyahu. Now he takes the Aderet. So, we don't know yet. We know that he's seen this event, but we don't know yet what Elisha is going to be like. And I'm not sure that he knows what he's going to be like, because we'll see that he's not confident. He takes the aderet, asher naflami, Allah, that had fallen off of Eliyahu, vayaker hamayim, and he hits the water with it, vayomar ayeh Hashem Elokei Eliyahu. He says, where is the God of Eliyahu? Afhu vayaker hamayim veichatzu heina vahina vayavor Elisha. So he too hits the water, and they pass one, and he passes through it. They split, and he passes through them as well by Avor Elisha. So he splits the river just like Eliyahu split the river. But Rashi and the Radak quote the tradition that points out that this is a greater miracle to some extent. That when Eliyahu splits the river, there's Eliyahu and there's Elisha there. And if Elisha is going to be the guy who will eventually get some. Will become a replacement for Eliyahu. He has some merit of his own. So when the two of them are walking together and they split the river, they have the dual merit working there. Pikur Eliezer notices that this is a double here because he now does it on his own. That whole topic of doubling is a theme in Midrash, meaning Elisha asks for something and it would seem that he gets it. And if you follow Nach, if you follow his career, we'll see many of the miracles of Eliyahu's will be doubled. But an example that the Gemara raises and suggest, and the Gemara's in a whole discussion of where you can bury evil people, whether or not you can bury them near righteous people. So the Gemara notes that there's a story later on in the Navi where a man is buried next to Elisha, and his bones touch Elisha's bones, and the man comes to life and goes away, and so the Gemara says that proves you're not supposed to bury evil people near righteous people. And the Gemara says, well, maybe that was just because Elisha needed to bring two people back to life. Eliyahu brought one person back to life. Elisha brings one back to life. Maybe this was the second one. So the Gemara says, that's true, but it's not enough because of whatever reason within the story there's a detail that you didn't need over there. So this whole theme of Elisha doubling what Eliyahu did is an important one because it would seem to be that Eliyahu had told him, if you see everything about me, you will get double. And he did see him go up. So that's what we tend to assume, that Elisha got double. And so here, this would be an example of the doubling, that when it came to the splitting of the sea, Eliyahu did it with Elisha there, and Elisha does it completely on his own. So those guys who had followed them across to the Jordan and watched from far, so they see him come back. They apparently didn't see, when they crossed the Jordan, you can see across the river, it's not like so far, but apparently they didn't see what happened with Eliyahu, which would make sense in terms of what I suggested before, in terms of Eliyahu resisting Elisha's being there. They were apparently unworthy, and they didn't see so much of what happened. So they see him coming. They see the spirit of Eliyahu has, in fact, rested on Elisha, because Elisha has now split a river, just like Eliyahu split a river. And they come to greet him, and they bow down to him to the ground. They are, again, a problem in Rashi's reading that Adonecha, no Adoneinu, is here a problem because it seems like they are bowing down to him as if he is now the leader of them. So, a question. So, Vayomer Elav, Hineina Yeshet Avadecha Chamishim Anashim B'nei Chayil. They said, you know, we've got 50 B'nei Chayil, Radak thinks being very speedy guys who can cover a lot of ground. We have 50 guys here who are very, very fast and have a lot of strength. Yelchu Na V'yivakshu Et Adonecha. Let's go look for Eliyahu. Pen Nisa'o Ruach Hashem, lest Ruach Hashem took him somewhere, right? We've seen before Ovadia was worried about this Ruach Hashem taking Eliyahu places. Vayashlicheu be'achad arim, maybe he left him in a mountain, or be'achad agayot, or in a valley. Vayomer lo tishlach. She says, don't take him because he's not anywhere. He went up to Shamayim. So the Radak points out something odd about this. These are the same prophets, these are the same people who had said to Elisha, you know, your master is being taken from you today. So they apparently had the prophecy as well. They had understood it well. That whole idea. They knew what was going on in the future, even though if they're at Eliyahu's level, we know why they know it. But here, they either know it or don't know it because they are or not Eliyahu's level. So then why all of a sudden are they looking for Eliyahu? So the Zach says, well, they weren't sure. Right? They thought maybe he was taken somewhere else. So they'd had a vision. So this is sort of a question within prophecy. They had a vision that he was being taken. But then when he disappears, they thought maybe it's like his other disappearances, where it's just the Ruach Hashem taking him places. Okay. So that's what they say. But Elisha's having none of it. Elisha knows what happened. And they continue ad bosh. So ad bosh could just be taken in a minimal kind of way, as they just pressured him until evening or until they wore him down. But Rashi has a reading in which Rashi says that ad bosh means until it was embarrassing for Elisha to continue to resist it. Now, why would it ever become embarrassing for him to resist it? So Rashi says at some point it begins to look like he doesn't want them to find Eliyahu, and that's why he's resisting it. So therefore, he has to give in, and he has to say, okay. So rather than ad bosh meaning just until he gave up or until he gave in, he says ad bosh is until he's embarrassed to say no any longer. And so that's what happens. So they go, right? So they go. So they look for 3 days and they don't find him, right? So they come back and he's still in Yericho. Meaning, presumably they said to him, "We didn't find him." And he says, "I didn't say. I said you shouldn't go." So obviously they didn't find him. I understand that. So now Eliyahu was gone. Eliyahu's career has ended. Eliyahu's has gone up the Shamayim, and now it's Elisha's turn to begin to be the influential Navi among the Jewish people. So he's in Yericho, but you want to hear Elisha, he's in Moshav Yartov. It's a great city to live in, Kasher Danira, as you see. The Mayim Ra'im Ve'aretz Meshakalet. But the water isn't good, and the land is killing us. I mean, the land is killing us because we have a problem with the water, and if you fix the water, we're going to be better off. So they're asking for his help with dealing with this issue, because people are dying and there's all these sorts of problems, right? The Radak suggests that Yericho has a long history of being cursed. We've spoken about the curse of not rebuilding it. Eliyahu had added to that when Chiel's sons died as he was rebuilding it. Eliyahu said, so it's not going to rain now, and therefore it's all problematic in those terms. So they're complaining to Elisha. They want to change the history of Yericho. They'd like to break that pattern of problematicness of these things, right? So they ask Elisha for help with this. So what does Elisha do? Vayomer kechuli tzlochit chadasha v'simu sham melach v'yikhu elav. He says, take a new jar and put salt in the jar. Vayetil motza hamayim v'yashlech sham melach v'yomer kormar Hashem rifeiti lamayim ha'ela lo yeh misham od mavet u'mishakalet. He takes salt and Radak notes and other notes that this is a miracle within a miracle, because in general salt is nothing that makes water better, it makes water worse. And he puts the salt into the water and he says it's done, it's better, it's cured. And that's what the pasuk says after that. The water is instantly healed as Elisha had predicted it would be, and that's the end of it. So the question is, what is this miracle? We know what the miracle of Elisha's is, but what's the purpose of the miracle of Elisha's? Right? It does demonstrate his power. Demonstrates his power in a way that's positive for the people who experience it. And it shows a mastery of the physical that I think is going to be one important aspect of Elisha's life. That Elisha is there to show that in the name of God, the physical can be changed. That's why the Mefarshim emphasize that this was a miracle within a miracle. Right? He didn't just heal the water. He healed the water by throwing salt in it. And the point of doing the miracle within a miracle is to emphasize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has full control of the physical if he wants to and when he wants to. So, Vayam Misham Beit El, he goes up from there to Beit El, V'hu Oleh Baderech U'Narim K'tanim Yatzu Min Ha'ir. He's going up on the road to Beit El, meaning he's now going back in the way that he had come down with Eliyahu. He's going back to where he had come from. He's going on the way, and U'Narim K'tanim Yatzu Min Ha'ir. So, Narim K'tanim could just mean young boys. But Rashi says it doesn't only mean young boys, it means menu arim min ha-mitzvot. They didn't have any mitzvot in them. And that suggests an impression that their behavior reveals that they are problematic in some way. Not only that, when Elisha kills them, so the Radak notes that there are various opinions in Chazal. There's a whole discussion in Chazal as to who these kids were and what was wrong with them, and he did, and he kills them. So the Radak quotes several opinions with Chazal. So whether he did it because Chachamim tend to create death wherever they see it, or he saw that all of their mothers got pregnant in Yom Kippur when they're not supposed to be having relations with their husbands, or whether he sees that they have no merits, and they're never going to have any merits. Whatever it is, he sees something, or they're idol worshippers, he sees something wrong with them, is what the Radak is saying. So he comes here, and he meets these boys, and they make fun of him, and they say, get up, you bald man. So that in and of itself, I think it's meant to show that they have problematic issues because they speak so to a prophet of the Jewish people, and they have no sensitivity to that. So vayifen acharav vayir'eim, and he turns around and he sees them, and this vayir'eim, Rashi and Radak agree and Chazal agree that vayir'eim doesn't mean he saw them physically. It means he saw them metaphysically and spiritually. And vayikalalem, and he curses them, b'shem Hashem, in the name of God. Vateitzin ashtayim dubim min hayar, and two bears come out of the forest. And here, the shtayim dubim, the question is whether this is another miracle within a miracle, in that Radak suggests an opinion that says that there was no forest there. And so when two dubim come out of the yar, it's the yar came, and then the dubim came out of the yar, and it might have been a double miracle. And the dubim killed 42 of these boys. So, interesting reactions in Chazal to this idea of, to this 42. First important issue is that Chazal point out that if you don't accompany strangers, this is what it leads to. And what they say is that had anybody accompanied Elisha, the people of Yericho, had accompanied Elisha on the road, then when the boys came, they could have calmed him down. So it's not that they're not accompanying him led to him being dead, because he was fine. He can handle himself, right? He has mastery of the physical, and therefore he can handle himself for sure. So it's that he ends up killing or getting the boys killed, and maybe they deserved it, maybe they didn't, but he ends up getting the boys killed. So that's an interesting reaction of Chazal. And the other interesting reaction of Chazal is the 42 boys that were again in Sota, the same place, says that this was a result of the 42 korbanot, the 42 sacrifices that Balak had offered, and that Balak's offering the 42 sacrifices had led to the Jewish people losing out. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. This thing of Balak offering 42 sacrifices has been used as an example of being osek in Torah and mitzvos shelo lishma, in being involved in Torah and mitzvos shelo lishma, not for the right reasons and not for the right purposes, and that therefore Bilam ended up having Balak ended up having root come from him. So the Gemara says, you're right, but he really wanted to do it to hurt the Jewish people, and therefore it also had a negative impact as well. So those 42 korbanot, those 42 sacrifices that Bilam had told Balak to offer and to sacrifice, ended up being both a positive thing for the Jews, in that root comes from them and for Balak, but also a negative thing in that it leads to these 42 boys being killed. And it, again, you can take the comparison even further, because then the question is, when you take the comparison even further, what is it about this incident that would be a reflection or a mirror of what happened back then with Balak? But that's really a discussion to go into deeper at another time. What we do see of Elisha is that he has a temper, and Chazal blame him for this temper. Chazal think that this is one of the incidents that will eventually lead to Hashem deciding that his time on earth needs to be ended. That's one issue that comes up with this. So the temper is an issue. The not having intercessors, people stepping in to help Elisha control his insistence on what's right and what's good, right? Because that's what's going on here, right? He is overly exacting. It's not that these boys didn't deserve to die. It's more that Chazal have a sense that we prefer not to kill people even when they do deserve to die. And that Elisha does not refrain from that. And he only had some B'nai HaNevi'im with him. They might have interceded with him and stopped it. So that's another aspect of this thing. And then there's the Balak aspect of it, the whole question of the ramifications of Balak back then in Moab and offerings to God and serving God and all of that, and how that affects the future of the Jewish people, which is really too much for us to get into right now. So that's the end of Perek Bet, a complicated metaphysical Perek. Eliyahu going up to the heavens, Elisha beginning his career as a miracle worker. That will be an important continuing aspect of Elisha's career as he knew it, apparently, because he asks for it from Eliyahu. We see the beginnings of that, ending with the death of these 42 young men who were inappropriate and unacceptable, but on the other hand, perhaps their dying was not the outcome we would have preferred to have. Have a great day.